Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Culture Talks. We are Heather and Shyla, the regional managers of Crown's Global Skills team. I'm Heather, I'm based in the UK and I oversee programmes in the EMEAs and the Americas region.
Hello, I'm Shyla, I'm based in Hong Kong and I oversee programmes in Asia Pacific.
Each episode of Culture Talks, we want to pull back the curtain of culture, bust the myths and do this with our own stories and examples. We want to showcase the impact and the scope of how culture talks in different ways.
So last episode, we looked at how different cultures approach solutions. This episode, we're exploring the impact of relocation on your identity. Mm. So think about how you introduce yourself. What do you think of when you answer the question, "Who am I?" We want to explore why that matters, not just for individuals, but for companies too.
Yes, absolutely. And today's topic is one that's very close to our heart. So today we're sharing stories of people that we work with, as we normally do, but we're stepping away from cultural training and the geographical culture. And today we're looking at the culture of being you, your norms, your values, your behaviours, all of those that build up your image of who you are, your identity. So we're going to be using the examples we hear all the time from relocating partners who take our support programmes, because they're often the ones whose lives are most impacted, and this is the most unseen from a corporate perspective, but it has a real impact on people's lives and also successful assignments.
Yeah, and this is just isn't just a consideration for those relocating, right?
No.
Right, reassessing your identity is something that we all go through, even if we don't realise we're doing it. I mean, think about your answer to "Who are you?" changes when you get married, divorced, have kids, or even get a new job.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even if you have a crazy new haircut, you change how you think about yourself. Yeah. And it's not just people. Companies change identities. So look at McDonald's when they moved away from their red and yellow branding and that Ronald McDonald identity. Look at like the UK, like countries do it. You know, the UK after Brexit is still trying to assimilate its new identity, and people are really struggling with that.
Mm. And you struggle with your identity. It impacts on everything, your well-being, your health, your mood and your focus.
Yeah, absolutely. So joining us on the episode today is Jo Latimer. Jo is based in Australia. She works with Shyla in Global Skills in Asia Pacific. Jo, welcome to the podcast.
Hello from Melbourne. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Jo. So we're talking about identity and we're going to look at two parts. Who are you? What do you do? And even explore whether it's different for men or for women. So let's start with getting you to introduce yourself, Jo. Who are you?
Who am I? That's a great question and a huge question. So, okay, where do I start? I'm Joanne or Joanne Marie, depending on who I'm speaking to and whether I've been naughty or nice. I'm a wife and a mother. I have three citizenships. I'm a New Zealander, British, Australian. Mm. I have global experience of relocating 7 times. I work with Shyla in the Global Skills team in Asia Pacific, but I'm also a coach and I deliver support programs for partners who are relocating. So what else do you want to know?
I love those different names, right? That's just so, it really conjures up your identity, like how you respond, but also who you are to other people. So today we're separating out who am I and what do I do a little bit so that we can explore each one from different angles. But they are so overlapping. So let's acknowledge that it can be hard to differentiate where one starts and the other stops. But we're going to give it a little go.
Yes. I mean, identity is so very closely linked to your purpose in life.
Yeah.
I mean, and we have to have a clear self-identity to then have a clear purpose of where we want to go and what we want to do. And that's why we introduce ourselves like we do at parties or meeting someone new, like where do you come from? What do you do? And those main big questions to get to know someone quickly.
Yeah. And so, Jo, you're the one, as you said, who's closely connected to those partners and support them to reinvent their identity. And before we get into unpacking all the aspects of who are you and what do you do, let's talk a bit about why this is so important for companies to consider.
Yeah, there's a real impact on corporates because If you have a happy and adjusted partner, that leads to a more successful assignment because the working assignee is able to focus more at work because they're not worried about their partner at home not having a job or, you know, not settling in the new location, and therefore they're achieving their business objectives, having a good return on investment for the company. And also the company avoids the cost of a failed assignment. I mean, look at it. I mean, you've paid for that assignee and their family to get out to that location. If it fails, you've then got to repatriate them home and then send out another assignee in their place. There could be real big financial hits for those kinds of decisions.
Yeah, and it's not just a few assignments that it actually impacts. You know, we actually found a staggering statistic that said that 70% of failed overseas working projects are attributed to unhappy families. That was from HR News.
It's just bonkers, isn't it? 70% are about unhappy families. And just thinking still about those companies, it's not just about ensuring tangible returns as to why companies, you know, really, you know, need to be thinking about this. Companies can really offer added value to them and their employees, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, we're all today, as everyone's talking about well-being with for their assignees. So, you know, there's well-being value. There's also professional value because it offers the assignees and their employees career development and progression and international experience. And that in turn creates loyalty from the assignee because they know that they're going to have these experiences and opportunities and they will be happy to relocate again. And on the other side of that, the company gets a great reputation for actually looking after the employees and the whole family and, you know, on relocation. And that's an absolute winner, and it attracts people to their company. They want to work for them. So it's a win-win situation.
And that's what people are looking for, you know, in companies, but also really, you know, in life now. And, you know, again, we're sort of thinking about it's not just about relocation, but people are looking for that human centric approach. Just like we talked about last episode, companies are looking at how to create policies and move towards a human centric approach. Everybody wants to be having their needs looked after. So particularly when you're thinking about changing your identity, everyone wants to be able to have those needs looked after.
Exactly. So let's dive into those two pillars of identity. Firstly, that really big one, who am I?
I think it's important here to first acknowledge that this is more for the partners rather than the assignees, because even though the assignee is there and they are changing and their identity might change a bit, that they're actually moving with a job in the same company that they've worked for. So we have to.
And that's true that there's already a structure in place and shape. And that comes from knowing the job you're moving to. But I guess for partners, there's this really uneasy vacuum, right? And often, you know, the obvious answer is, well, I need to find a job. But why is that? Is it because it, I guess it shapes who I am, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some people struggle with it. And I did. I mean, I can share an example. We relocated to Hong Kong in 2008, just before the financial crash from the UK. And because of that, I could not find a job as quickly as I anticipated in Hong Kong. And that made me feel uncomfortable because I was an independent professional woman who was financially independent. And I had felt I had to ask permission to spend money. And that was one of the toughest things I went through. It really challenged who I thought I was and what I could do because I didn't feel I had control because I wasn't earning or contributing to the household. And that felt really, really weird. And, you know, I just couldn't be that person I was before until I was earning again.
Yeah, that really, it must have been so hard, Jo. I think that, you know, but because it, like you said at the end there, because it's not just about like finding a job, it's finding back who you wanted to be. You were having to be a different person for a while, and that was creating that friction, right?
Yeah, I didn't know what to do with myself, really. And it's not just me. You often see that reaction in partners at the start of their programs. They settle in, the house is there, is settled, and you know, maybe kids in school, and then they just go, oh, wake up one morning, what about me? What am I going to do? I haven't got my responsibilities anymore. I don't know quite who I am and what I want to do with myself. I mean, I'm suddenly a partner. I'm somebody's mum. I'm attached to an assignment. I don't really feel part of this assignment. I'm just a tag along, and that's not enough anymore.
Oh, that word attachment, that just doesn't sit well at all.
That's not nice, an identity. It's funny, clearly we all have a very strong identity of being independent. Being the partner. But that is it, isn't it? Like, you have to reassess so much that you've previously taken for granted in those situations. You know, how you think about yourself is so shaped by where you see yourself as belonging. You know, your friendship groups, or the hobbies that you have, and the groups that you attended with those hobbies, or the music that you like to listen, or, you know, whether you earn your own money, all of those groups or those cultures, if you like, have cultural norms. They have cultural values and behaviors within them. And those values really shape and build up those pieces of ourselves from inside them, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, when you're suddenly the partner, in inverted commas, I mean, how can I explain this? Okay, think of a jigsaw puzzle. Okay, so you're at home, you've got your jigsaw puzzle, it's a beautiful picture of what you've made yourself to be and your identity. So when you relocate, all those parts are shaken up, you know, they're put in a box, and sometimes pieces get lost on the relocation, on the way over, on the shipment, and you don't necessarily have the picture to follow, or you have to change and adapt it. So therefore, you have to go back to basics. You have to do the soul searching. And that can be quite overwhelming for people. They're not in the right frame of mind to even think or reinvent themselves, and or even be prepared to learn more about themselves.
So, I mean, I guess this is why coaching is so effective at this point, you know, supporting people to find their answer to these questions.
Yeah. It's a good analogy, isn't it? Although obviously Crown would never lose a piece of your jigsaw, would it, when they're relocating you?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay, so let's look at the other piece of identity, the what do you do? And this is something that we're seeing increasingly in the partners. You know, most of the programs we deliver now, people are looking for jobs because there's such a rise in dual career households, dual career families who are relocating. So what do we all need to consider when we rebuild that part of our identity?
Well, if we stick with the jigsaw puzzle picture, I don't know what you're like, but when I do jigsaw puzzles, I like to put the foundations in place, which is the edges. I've got to see what I've got and what hasn't changed and what I have control over, and put them in first. Those edges are important.
Yeah, and those edges are perhaps previously what you might have taken for granted before you made that relocation.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. So if we take example of qualifications, so when you move to a new country or start applying for jobs, you know, are they still applicable? Can they be recognized in the new country? Do I have to go through placements or re-education or upskill myself? There's lots of questions just on that basic one aspect. Yeah.
And that's not just like a logistical hurdle there, is it? That's a real emotional hurdle, because you're having to go back, aren't you, and kind of reassess what is already there. You know, if you're a doctor or you're a teacher, you've worked hard to gain that title and gain that level of education and perhaps respect in the hierarchy that goes with it. So when you have to go and reassess it, it's tricky.
Oh, absolutely. And those challenges can really knock people back. And, you know, for example, I've had partners I've worked with on programs that have relocated from France, where they take great pride in the university they attended or the alumni or the networks they've built up or the careers. And they really struggle with the fact that coming into Hong Kong, where I worked with them, or Australia, that doesn't matter. They just go, I don't know them. It doesn't mean anything to me. So, you know, less emphasis is put on it. And that can be really affronting for someone whose life up to that, you know, hard work and life up to that point is suddenly like not recognized, and no one cares.
Yeah, that sounds really difficult. I mean, that's, Yeah, I don't know. It just it's hard, right? It's really difficult. And what about when it comes to applying for a job, the next stage? I know I absolutely hate writing my CV and LinkedIn profile.
Yes.
But it's, you know, it's usually just having to add on what's to a few things that are already there, right?
Yes, sometimes. I mean, you really need to go back to the drawing board, because transferring from one country to another doesn't necessarily cross over, you know, in regards to job titles or responsibilities. So, for example, if you're considered a manager in your home country, and it may not mean the same in your host country, because a manager could emphasize managing people, whereas you might be managing projects or, you know, managing products or services. So we've really got to do some research to be able to say, this is what I've done. You've got to break it down and make sure you're using the same words and the same phrases and the titles that the new country recognize quickly to be able to tell them what you've got to be put on the table and to offer to that company in that position.
Wow, that's a really strange idea, isn't it? That, you know, I literally have to rewrite who I was and what I did to fit someone else's norms.
Yeah, it's really unsettling. And even more so if you think about when you move to somewhere like, well, I moved to Egypt. And in Egypt, it really is like getting a job really is more about who you know rather than what you've done. And, you know, my sort of innate Britishness struggles with that because it feels unfair.
Yeah, and that's true. And even with recruitment agencies, they can differ. So working in the UK as a recruitment agent, we advocated for candidates. We look for jobs for them. We saw the skills and experience they could offer somebody and didn't just sort of stick to what we had. We could go out and search for them. But that changed when I went to Asia and Hong Kong. Because the recruitment agencies, they only focused on what the clients wanted. If you didn't tick the boxes on what the client wanted, well, they weren't going to proactively look for you. And very different different concepts. You had to had to sort of get your head around as well on how recruitment agencies or supports can help you.
That's so much to navigate when you're trying to find a job after relocation. And I guess this then explains this statistic from Permits Foundation that 44% of companies had employees return home early from an assignment during a 3-year period, largely due to partner concerns around career or employment.
And that's massive, isn't it? Of those 70% of assignments that failed because the partners were unhappy, 44%, so almost half again, is because that are because about, you know, creating issues around jobs. And seeing as we're asking, you know, the big questions today, Joe, say, for example, a partner can't work, you know, maybe for visa reasons. How or does that impact differently depending on whether the partner identifies as male or female?
Oh, wow.
Just throw that one at you.
Yeah, you can just do that. That's a huge topic. And I'm really going to just give you my personal opinion from working with partners. Okay, so this is just my personal opinion. And the answer is yes and no. Confusing you. I think everyone goes through that questioning, that re-identifying. But I would say in general, women might find it easier to reinvent themselves a little bit and build new relationships if they can't work. I think we're just because we have so many different titles and hats on. It comes to us a little bit easier. But men, even though I'm not generalized, you know, men can do that too. But I have seen that they can be vulnerable and struggle to find their tribe or their support because it's not something that they're doing every day, or it might be once in a lifetime event.
And actually, it's fascinating because we heard from other consultants as we prepared that often men relocating as partners have not faced this kind of identity questioning in the same way, you know, and they feel a little less prepared for it.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. If working could be the biggest part of their lives, and going to consider studying or starting a business or even being the main parent of the household, you've got to make sure you're structuring your day differently. You've got to make sure you understand, you know, getting the kids to school, getting them dressed, getting them fed, activities, you know, meal at night, shopping, washing, all those kind of things. It might be not something that they've focused on full time 24 hours a day, and they could feel really like a fish out of water.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, actually, to consider that, you know, it could be easier for women to adopt a new, like, what do I do part of their identity, because actually there is an established precedent, like you said, Jo, you know, there's different roles, you know, there's different identities that women have played across many societies, you know, stay at home or working full time, or, you know, that's a really awful term that used to be used, trailing spouse. Yeah, those are all, you know, very broadly accepted roles and identities that women have held, and that it's still changing for men. So yeah, there, you know, that's it's something that, you know, like you said, you and other consultants have identified that you've seen.
And it sounds like partners in general are more prone to being more isolated. So I guess the question really, you know, do you think that culture plays a part? I mean, I know we will always say yes to that, but, you know, Jo, what do you think?
Yeah, what do you think? I think it can be. I think if you're trying to build up a new identity that challenges your cultural norm of your home location, whether you're a stay-at-home parent or a full-time working parent, you know, I mean, both can be really tough.
Yeah. Yeah. Particularly if you're challenging your cultural norm, all the cultural norm of where you're relocating into. So, yeah, there's both sides of it. So what's the answer, Jo? what do we do?
You've given me lots of things.
Yeah,
I think the answer really is to give you space. Give yourself space and look after yourself. You know, give yourself time to understand what's going on around you, what your new environment can hold, what opportunities are out there. Explore what you want to do. This is a good, great chance to reinvent yourself, new country, new me, if you wish. Or you can continue the path that you're most happy doing. And if you can, get some support.
Oh, yeah, always, definitely.
It's always good to have someone there, you know, to brainstorm with.
Of course. And imagine how great it would be to have, you know, a professional with you helping you out through a breakup or losing your job, just working out your next steps together.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if I'd have had a professional help holding my hand and helping me through next steps when I've had crazy haircuts and regretted them afterwards, that would have made everything better. And that's all we have time for today. So today we've looked at identity, how relocation or really any huge life event impacts on the culture of being you and all of the norms and values that shape your identity and your idea of who you are and what you do. So as ever, we want to leave you with a question. Think about your identity. Who are you? What parts of your life make up that answer and are important in how you identify yourself right now? It is always fluid. Your identity will always change. But when you have had a change in your life, how did your identity need to adapt? So as ever, thank you so much for listening. Jo, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks.
Shyla, it is always a joy. Join us next time for episode 11 of Culture Talks.